WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Sadistic violence enters the home of a mother and her young son in Richard Bausch's new novel, In the Night Season. Their home is invaded by men who will abuse and torture them until the men get the information they're after about the woman's late husband, information she doesn't have. The book's title is taken from a passage in Job. The days of affliction have taken hold upon me. My bones are pierced in me in the night season, and my sinews take no rest. Richard Bausch is also the author of Violence, Rebel Powers, Good Evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and All the Ships at Sea, and The Last Good Time, which was adapted into a film. He's received the award in literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Bausch once said that his vital subjects are family, fear, love, and anything that is irrecoverable and missed. I told him that I thought violence was a subject often left to movies and genre fiction. I asked him why he wanted to write about it.
I've been taken to task pretty heavily for it, too, already by some anonymous somebody in Kirkus Reviews who said I ought to be ashamed of myself for, I don't know, I guess this person's idea is that I have some sort of priestly obligation to continue to write stories about people sitting in dentist offices. I don't know, but for me it was just to see if I could write a scary story. And, they always take off and become their own thing. And that seems to me to be my perfect right as a writer to do that. So
there is a certain assumption, perhaps a middlebrow assumption, that people read literature to get away from that, to get away from the violence that so permeates the rest of the media.
Yeah. I think of literature and of serious writing as an escape into life. And so for me, that means all of it. And this is certainly going on in the world. I also just, again, I had a feeling, I'd been reading a lot of Charles Dickens, and I used to say very glibly to creative writing classes, in the really best fiction, everybody's right. But that's not really true. I mean, there's some great villains in the world's literature, and I thought, well, I'm going to have some exterior badness. Usually the tensions my characters suffer are interior, and people feel it as the phrase modern angst, whatever that is. But but for me, that has always interested me, and I thought, I'm going to see if I can tackle it where there's a real palpable exterior something that is, even in my earlier novel, Violence, there are some bad guys who appear and do something, but the real conflict is interior through all of that book, that it's really that young man's attempt to contend with what he's been through. And in this case, I wanted my characters to be actually contended with the actual villains themselves, bad people with a particular appetite for violence.
I wonder if you think that there's a difference between the way people react to seeing violence on television or in movies and reading about it on a page in fiction.
Oh, I think I'll tell you that I think that we're so inured to the TV and movie violence that we no longer really even see it as violence. It's just, I have a habit of saying, sitting in a movie and a character will come up whom you just know is going to be the next person who's killed for one reason or another, and I say aloud so people around me can hear it, movie meet.
And, oh, I bet you're popular.
Oh, yeah, they love to go to the movies with me, especially my children. But it's always true, and I can pick it out. The gestures they make are all exactly the same in every instance. And I think that people, it's so much a convention of modern, films. And, they've even now got, movies that are so-called dark comedies where horrible, mayhem happens to human beings, and it's supposed to be funny. I just think that that it's not, movie violence isn't violence, and in a book, violence can be menacing. It can make you feel it the way it really is. I mean, that's what I wanted to do with the book Violence, was to actually, have the reader be able to see what it really is, and it might have been a strategic mistake, but that's what I had in mind when I was doing it, that there is a reality about it. And in this book, I want to hasten to say there is a happy ending of sorts. And
why do you feel you need to say that?
Oh, because I think people really these days don't want to buy books where they think they're going to be ambushed by something they don't want to think about. I really do. I mean, I think there's a large, large number of people who buy books really only for the hope of being somehow reassured or comforted in some way. This is such a stressful time to be alive, I suppose. There's so many things happening. There's so many changes. We're at the end of a century. And I just have a feeling that, that it's necessary for readers to understand that whatever kinds of harrowing things are in any book, that the real object of the book is to arrive at some sort of form of light, some sense of the worth, the worthiness of all of the things people do, to stay together and to love each other.
Well, getting back to the difference between violence as it's depicted in televisions and film, when you're seeing it, and violence when you're reading it, I first of all want to defend movies and say that I think there have been, many fine films in which the violence really does hurt.
Oh, yeah,
Although there's just so many films in which it's all so false and artificial, and as you say in your book, obligatory. You say in this book, those obligatory scenes in movies where people were running or diving to get away from the exploding fire. But anyways, that said, I think, I'm just really interested in your approach to it on the page. I was wondering if you could choose a few lines that you wrote pertaining to the attack, to one of the attacks in here. And there are several people who are attacked. Choose a few lines from one of those attacks and read them and then talk with us about choosing the words.
Okay. The boy has escaped from, this is his second escape from these bad people, and particularly from one bad person named Bags, who is a casual killer. And he's run away and is being pursued, and has falls in the field, and then when he comes to again, he's being carried. He was being carried head down by the waist. He saw the ground moving below, only inches from his eyes. This was Bags carrying him, and he would die soon. It would be death. He would find out what it was, and he had the thought as if the dying were simply the next thing in his life. It raked through him that this was the thing itself happening, and there wouldn't be any time, no person to look back on it and call it a name. His mind sped, everything throbbed. He tried to look up, but his neck and shoulders cramped, and then he seemed to drift again, all the blood having rushed to his head. It pounded in his ears, and something lifted him so that he could see that his bleeding hand dangled before him, that it had struck the ground and was hurting again. He held it in front of his eyes and looked at it, a bad slash across the palm and another bleeding cut on the back of the wrist. His head hurt. He was sick to his stomach. And then he remembered with a surge of hopeless excitement that he had seen his father. He tried again to look up. "Dad," he said. He couldn't see. The ground went by his face and then became concrete. He saw drops of blood there. He was being let down. His feet came in contact with the ground. He tried to stand, but his legs gave way. The sprained ankle and the cut, too, now. Whoever it was held him up and carried him through a doorway into the kitchen of the unfinished house. He was pulled to a chair and seated in it, and when he looked up again into the light from the windows, he saw his father. "Dad," he said. The face rearranged itself. "Reuther." Reuther clapped a hand brutally over the boy's mouth. It closed off his air. He sucked in, receiving the odor of the hand, a sick, dirty human smell of sweat and skin and something like wet paper bags. He coughed. Something hot rose in his throat to his mouth. He leaned forward out of Reuther's grasp and spit onto the floor.
Now talk to me about writing that scene, about choosing the language, about how painful, how graphic you wanted to make it.
In writing it, what I'm really trying to do is trying to imagine how it feels to have all that happen. So I'm trying to be in the boy's body and involve how that all feels, how it feels to be half conscious and thinking about the fact that this is death, that this is going to be it, even though he's wrong about that, and how the actual physical elements of it feel. Because it's not really just having to do with violence, it's having to do with everything that I write. I want to try to put the reader there physically to involve the reader's senses, because to me that's what it's really all about, telling good stories is getting the reader involved in every way, not just in it with the... I'm not writing to the reader's mind. I'm writing to the reader's nerve endings. And And I've always felt that way. And I think all really good art is doing that. And I'm not saying mine is necessarily successful in doing it, but that's what I'm trying to do anyway.
Well, I like your description of when Reuther claps his hand over the boy's mouth and the boy smells the human sweat and skin and something like wet paper bags. I think that's we all know what they smell like. It's a good sense image.
Yeah, and I don't know why I used it. I don't have any direct experience. A lot of this, I'm just making it up. Mm-hmm. All of it, I'm making it. I mean, especially this. I mean, the only thing about this that has any kind of relation to my life is that I set it in a large meadow and a series of houses, rural houses. That's much like where I live. My neighbors are making jokes about it. They're all locking their doors now, having read the book.
Against you.
Probably.
Richard Bausch is my guest. His new novel is called In the Night Season. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with writer Richard Bausch. His new novel is called In the Night Season. You've said that one of your subjects is irrecoverable loss. Do you feel like you've had that kind of loss?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I think all of us feel that. I mean, when... You know, for instance, coming in to do this interview, I was on a street corner where I remember someone making a joke 38 years ago. And I was on that street. It hasn't really changed all that much. And the feeling of that time that's gone by, this feels so, I don't know, so instantaneous. It doesn't feel like it was time. And for me, there's always an immediate sense of loss then, even though, of course, you know, if you ever presented, and I have been, you know, in fantasy, what if you really could go back? I really wouldn't do it because then I would miss all the people I have now. You know, I'd miss my children and stuff. I wouldn't want to go back there. But there is still a sense of loss.
Who's missing from back then?
Oh, just pals I had back then and folks, you know, my parents were both alive then, you know, my grandparents and my sister Barbara was alive, those kinds of memories, you know, when everyone was, I say when we talk about it at home to when Karen and I, to my wife Karen and I talk about it, I say when everyone was alive. So yeah, I think all of us as we go through life experience that sense of, to me it feels like the world is an increment more quiet when someone you love is gone, and there is a quality to the silence that's different than it was before. And even though you can be standing in the middle of a busy street, there's a not sound that's the voice of this person, you know, this person's presence in the world. So yeah, that always fascinates me. Fascinates me is not quite the word for it, because I'm not intellectually interested in it. I am branded by it as a person. So yeah, that's there.
I know that you have a twin brother, also a writer, named Robert Bausch. And are you identical twins?
Yep. Yep. You couldn't tell the difference between us, Terry, if we were in a room.
Do you have the same beard and haircut?
Absolutely. And his beard's slightly darker than mine. I got a little more gray in mine than he has in his.
Well, how come you don't shave and look different?
Well, he did for years, but then he grew to like the beard, so... So he went ahead and grew it, and he's made jokes about it for months. You know, he came to a reading of our friend George Garrett, Halloween night at George Mason University, and he said, "It's Halloween night. I've come as Dick," and everybody got a huge kick out of it.
When you were kids, did you feel like you were going through life as part of a couple?
When I was a kid, it's funny. Our parents treated us individually. I mean, when we were in the Air Force, we got separate letters almost every day from my mother with different news in it. And they didn't dress us alike or do any of that stuff. At school, they did it. We got an awful lot of it at school. So at school, we took steps to identify ourselves, to stake out territory. We had different friends. He dressed differently and wore his hair differently. And, you know, I got into basketball and he got into shooting pool. And we were just sort of intentionally sort of setting up dividing lines so these people would recognize when we were individual people.
Could you look at him years ago and think, that's how I look to the world?
No, I never could do that until I was separated from him for about a year and a half when I went to the University of Iowa, and I was in my mother and father-in-law, Jay and Betty Miller's house. I was in their extra bedroom working on a novella, and there was a mirror to my right, and I looked up from the typewriter and I saw my brother. It was the first time I ever could realize that we actually do look alike. I didn't never felt that way looking at him. I never felt like he looked like me. But that was a really strange experience, because for a good, 3 seconds, I thought I was looking at him. I almost spoke to it, and it was my own reflection.
Oh. So did you see your brother differently after that?
Not really. It's just I reported it to him, so it was really odd. He's like a dear friend. He's somebody extra I can be intimate with. I can tell him anything, and he feels the same way.
Well, did you start writing at about the same time?
No, he started first. He wrote a long historical novel when he was in the eighth grade, and everybody was involved. Okay, my sister Barbara was typing it, and I was drawing pictures, and he was drawing. He was really illustrating it, but I'd make suggestions and stuff. But everybody was sort of into it because he was just unscrolling. He was writing a Civil War novel, and then. Years went by, and then I started up, and he had stopped, and then he started up again. And it was always just a thing, that we did, shooting pool or something. We never thought of it as being a career or anything for a long time. It was just something we did.
Did you get into the question with your brother of who owns stories that you both live through? Who owns memories that you share? Who owns them as a writer? Who has the right to write those stories?
I never use them. I've never used anything that ever really happened. I think that we do, and it's really interesting. We will argue about what something happened to just to tell it in a party or something. I'll say, well, no, that was me. No, he remembers it clearly that it was him, and I cannot be convinced that it wasn't me, and it's lost now because it all happened so long ago. But we don't really... At least so far, I've never, for instance, written a story that had twins in it or a character who had a twin. It's not something that it just doesn't enter into it. It's always something we're making up, spinning it out.
I'm wondering if you've ever read a book or seen a movie or TV show that had a violent scene in it that you regret having in your mind now.
Oh, what a question. Wow. Yeah, there is. There is. There's a gratuitously violent Stephen King story called Apt Pupil, in which a kid kills a man, knifes a homeless man in an alley. And King describes the knife making an artificial smile in his face. The man is stabbing him in the face. And I wish I had not read that.
Why?
It's just, it felt to me so excessively going the wrong way with the stories. To me, I don't want to criticize King because I think he can write, but that particular story, I thought he was going to tell me something really different and new about the Holocaust. The apt pupil in the story, as I recall, and it's been about 12 years since I read it, but the apt pupil is a kid who is convinced that an elderly man in his neighborhood is a war criminal. And before it's over, all that comes of the story is he learns how to kill. And he goes and gratuitously kills this poor, helpless, homeless man by knifing him to death. And the knifing scene just seemed to me to be so appalling that I wished I hadn't read it. Gave me nightmares. Of course, that's exactly what he wants. But it didn't make me want to go back and get the next thing he wrote either. And I'm sure there are some people who feel that way about stuff I've written.
So what's the difference between violence and gratuitous violence, as far as you're concerned?
It's a little like trying to describe the difference, although I'm not saying the one is the other, but it's a little like describing the difference between pornography and eroticism.
Which is very subjective.
Yeah. To me, it seems to me that if you get the feeling that everything else in the story is a pretext to arrive at the thing, that's gratuitous. In other words, if it doesn't seem to be, and I admit it's very subjective, and I'm talking just as a reader, if if it doesn't arise out of the circumstance and is not, you know, necessitated by it in some way having to do with the story, I mean, God knows the end of Hamlet is a bloodbath, then it feels to me gratuitous, and it just felt that way in that case. There are other stories of kings that I found. I mean, the story Rita Hayworth in Shawshank Redemption, I think, is a very affecting story and very quite well done. But that particular story, Apt Pupil, it just felt to me like everything in the story was just meant to arrive at this terrible description of this man being stabbed to death.
Richard Bausch, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Richard Bausch's new novel is called In the Night Season.